Moro. It's a Friday morning. Good morning, my dear listeners. It is a Friday. Thank goodness it is a Friday morning. How are you? How is your Friday morning? This morning is the 23rd of January 2026. I nearly said 2025. So, it's a Friday morning. How are you? How is your Friday morning? So hopefully, it's a very, very, very looking forward to the weekend. And normally it gives people a different oomph, you know, as they call it. It gives people a different vuma. And many people normally are in a good mood when it comes to Friday. So my name is Mike Oshaveli. And welcome to Unpacking the Day on Eagle FM, your number one talk radio station. So this is Unpacking the Day, your daily dose of what is really going on in business news, economic news, and politics. So every weekday, we cut through the noise to make sense of big stories, of trends, of numbers that are making headlines. So we keep it clear and sometimes a little witty and also always being curious. Curious, asking the question that matter and giving you a fresh take on what people are saying out there. So the views shared during our segment don't necessarily reflect of those Eagle FM. We are here to unpack what other people are saying and spark a meaningful conversation so that you can be part of the bigger conversation. So this is your space. This is your platform to unpack the headlines and get to the heart of the stories. So good morning. If you're just joining us, our time is about 8 minutes past the hour of eight, and we're coming to you live, from the Ondangwa studio in the great might, in the mighty, region of Oshana region. So welcome as usual. If you quite new on our program, so what we do, we start with our segment of On This Day in Africa. So, and welcome to On This Day in Africa. Today we're turning the pages of our shared history to see what happened on this day, January the 23rd. Now, it's a date marked by act of resistance, the fight for freedom, and the birth and passing of true African icons. Stay tuned if you want to know who are those ones. Now, let's begin our journey in the year 1915 in what is now Malawi, but was then known as Nyasaland. It was known as Nyasaland. So a Baptist minister named John Chilembwe, who was a powerful voice against colonial injustice, led an uprising against British rule. On this day, his rebel attacked the A.L. Bruce plantation at Magomero. Actually, then the plantation was like a symbol of the operation they faced. So the rebellion then was bold, though tragic. There were a number of British people died. It was really a statement of resistance against colonialism. So the spirit of fighting for freedom echoes through our next story, this time from the West Africa. So fast forward to 1963. On this day, the 23rd of January, the Guinea-Bissau War of Independence began. It was the start of a long and hard-fought armed struggle by the people of the Guinea-Bissau to break free from Portuguese colonial rule. Now, this was a pivotal moment that would eventually lead to their nation's freedom. staying in that era of liberation, we tend to Southern Africa, around the mid 1960s. A key document in the fight against apartheid was published in South Africa. Now, this was the official report from the famous treason trial where 156 leaders of the anti-apartheid movement, including the key figures from the ANC, had been charged. Now, the trial, which ended in the acquittal of all, was a major turning point, and the report remained a powerful testament to their struggle. But January the 23rd is not just about conflict. It's also about landmark steps towards human dignity. We go way back to 1846 for our next event. On this day, Tunisia officially abolished slavery. Excuse me. You know, this was a groundbreaking move, making Tunisia one of the very first nations in Africa and the Arab world to take such a progressive step, a truly important moment in the journey for human rights. And now let's take a moment to remember some of the great African figures who mark this day. So in 1962, a legend was born. Stephen Keshi entered the world in Nigeria. So known as the Big Boss, he was one of the, he was not just a fantastic footballer, but also one of the Africa's most celebrated managers. So he famously led Nigerian Super Eagles to win the African Cup of Nations. He was really a true icon of the beautiful game. So he's a true icon of the beautiful game. So, and on more sober note, on this day in 2018, we said goodbye to a musical giant, South African jazz trumpeter. Can you say someone who play a trumpet? Can you call them a trumpeter? Yeah. So a trumpeter, Hugh Masekela, South African jazz trumpeter, if I can call him that way, Hugh Masekela, passed away. So often called the father of South African jazz. So his music was the soundtrack to the anti-apartheid struggle. And his trumpet gave voice to the hopes and pains of a nation. And his spirit lives on in his timeless music. So that is all for this segment. That is all for this segment of On This Day in Africa. Join us again, and that will be on Monday as we continue to explore the moment that had shaped our continent. Stay tuned. We're going to look at the thought of the day after this.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one.
When you choose UNAM,
you get credible accreditations.
You get internationally recognized qualifications.
You get a university with a growing reputation.
When you choose UNAM,
you get a head start on local jobs.
You become connected in a growing Namibia.
You stay in the best country in the world.
Because you already know you love it here.
Open your mind to UNAM.
And UNAM will open the world to you.
UNAM is your university, Namibia.
Because the you in UNAM is you.
Exactly. The you in UNAM is you. Okay, make sure that you register for UNAM if you want to see yourself in UNAM. In UNAM. Yeah, in UNAM. Okay? If you want to see yourself, do you know who say in UNAM? Yeah, I wouldn't say that. I would mention that tribe. Okay. Now, welcome. It's the Friday the 23rd. And what is our thought for the day today? The dog that follows everyone will end up lost. The dog that follows everyone will end up lost. Now, this proverb warns against lack of direction and independent judgment. It means that a person who tries to please everyone, imitate others blindly, or constantly shift loyalties shift loyalties will eventually lose their own path. You know, they will eventually lose their own path, their identity, or even purpose. So without a clear sense of direction or values, one becomes vulnerable to confusion and failure. So in many African oral traditions, the dog symbolizes loyalty and instinct. A dog that keeps switching owners or following every passby loses its sense of home. So likewise, a person who follows every opinion, every trend or leader without discernment risk losing focus and stability. So hopefully your decision you're making today and choices you make, you do it with some kind of discernment so that you don't risk losing your focus and your stability. So the dog that follows everyone will end up lost. That is our thought for the day. Make sure that you mention that to someone today. All right. So good morning. We are happy, very happy that you join us. And thanks for joining us. And you are right. You exactly in the right place, you know, at the right time. And thanks for joining us. And thanks for choosing Eagle FM to be in your company at this point in time. So what do we have for you this morning? So very, 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 we have something, how would I say, maybe something big beyond our power or something like that. No, Namibia is pursuing international partnership to advance its nuclear power ambitions. We're going to look at these stories, but I also want you to look at the story in today's edition of The Villager, by Shombe, by David Shombe, on industrialization agenda, industrialization agenda, which actually talk about the need for disaster risk management professionals. So yeah, I want us to also check off that if you have a villager, if you are subscribed to The Villager, check that story as well, because what we're going to talk about in there, really our angle of unpacking would actually, you know, look at some of the things that, that are mentioned that are actually what is the article is all about. That article in the today's editions of The Villager. So make sure that you subscribe to The Villager. It's a digital copy that you will be receiving for free every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So what you need to do is just send a WhatsApp message to this number. Okay. Write it down. If you don't have a pen and you are on the ground, write it on the ground. Send in that. Okay. 081-241-44. Okay. Wishanga mefururu. 081-241-44. So that's the number. If you just say subscribe and you send your name and your email, you will be subscribed and be able to receive, a latest news in our business, economics, and everything in between. So make sure that you subscribe, for the Villager. So, if we have time, this is also very interesting. Very, very, very interesting. The world has entered an era of global water bankruptcy. We have entered, right now, we are in the era of a global water bankruptcy. It's a new term, you know. We use water crisis, water stress. Now, we are actually in the era of water bankruptcy. So, and that's according to the new United Nations report. We're going to look into that. And this is an era where, well, it actually has irreversible consequences. So irreversible consequences, we're going to look into that. Very interesting. Make sure that you stay tuned for that as well. So, and, well, your participation will also be part of the show as well. So, and we will have a look quick at also the industrial brief in the villages this morning. So make sure you stay tuned because as you can see, fully packed. And it's just for you. Just for you. So we will be back in a sec.
Omudiha wutekirwa kaguna imatina omjo. Chikao shafa sana nana longe shifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moya o ota ingongo tisa mwene. Anange shifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayakuro ni randito mwa yoe yonge shifa yoe kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende pimemeha uka kombanga nina. Kara omkwa shifareki uimopo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengira seoma kwa nara heta tuimu. Datundatu heari hamano tano o niyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
Well, welcome back. Welcome back. Our time is 23 minutes past the hour of 8, and we are right at the very beginning of our show. And welcome. And I want you to unpack this with me, because there's so much to unpack. So welcome back to Unpacking the Day. And I'm your host, Mike Oshoveli. So, we have got something big to talk about today, something really, really big. We are talking about nuclear power. You probably said, we have talked about that before. No, yes, we have. Okay, we have. But this time, the big news is coming out of that big world leaders meeting in Davos, you know, that where we have all this, you know, big hats meeting in Davos in Switzerland, and is that Namibia is getting very, very serious about going nuclear. You know the good things why sometimes we have this, our ministers and our government official, when they go to these conferences, sometimes they say things that you wouldn't hear if they were here. You understand? And we have to take them serious because they're saying this to the whole to the global world. So, yeah, Namibia is getting very, 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 very serious about going nuclear. Now, our top government planner, who is our top government planner? Of course, the Director General of the National Planning Commission. So, Dr. Kairem Mwende stood on a global stage and said clearly that nuclear energy is no longer just a dream. Okay? It's no longer just a dream. It's a plan, a strategy they are pursuing vigorously. Well, underline my word, vigorously. So let's unpack this together. So because, well, as much as we can say, I mean, as much as we can celebrate this, or how would I not maybe celebrate? As long as we can vision this, well, there are challenges as well. So, and as I said, read the article. Read also the article from David Chombe in the villages on industrialization agenda needs disaster risk management professionals. All right. So, and we will highlight some of the things that Kairem Mwende and the core mention. Now, first, let's get the facts straight from what we are hearing. Now, the government's message is simple, very simple. They have three main reasons for pushing this nuclear button, if you like. Three reasons for pushing this nuclear button. So we want to push this nuclear button. And there are three reasons. And some of these reasons you know. All right. Number one is energy security. So, and we all know this story, don't we? So the frustration of load shedding, the worry of being so dependent on electricity from our neighbors, especially from the Eskom down south, you know. So, and the government now is saying, hey, that is genoeg. Enough is enough. We need to control our own power. So, for us to keep the lights on and our industry running, we need to control our own power. So we stop. We don't want to begging every time. We don't want to go to someone's table and beg all the time. So that's what now we know. That's one main reason. Energy security. All right. So, and probably nobody dispute that. Nobody would actually disagree with that. So, and the number two reasons why we want to press this, why we want to push this nuclear button, is economic growth. Right now, what do we do? Actually, maybe the question is, what do we do with our uranium? What do we do with our uranium at this point in time? We dig it out of the ground, and we ship it overseas. We ship it to overseas. And the irony is, we are the third largest uranium producer in the world. In the whole world. Let me add the whole world. The third producer of uranium, you know? That's the irony, because we don't see the final product of that. We don't see the final product at all. So we sell the raw ingredient and then buy back the finished electricity, often at a higher price, which is always the case. So the government is asking a powerful question. Maybe they shouldn't actually ask a powerful question. They should actually tell us what actually the plan. So, but they're asking a powerful question. Why not add value? Why not add value right here? This is the question you're asking. You and I asking, why not add value right here? Why not turn our own uranium into our own power? We keep asking this question, and the government keep asking this question, and maybe even export electricity to our neighbor instead of now us importing. Maybe this going to put us in a position where we export now electricity to our neighbor. And remember, we are the third, you know, the third in the world, in the whole world. We are the third largest uranium producers in the whole world. And number one in Africa. That should mean something. Okay? That should mean something. So, and then we come back after this question.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
No. So welcome back. All right. We're looking at that Namibia is seriously considering pushing the nuclear power button, you know? So, and as we were talking about the last, the second, reasons, why Namibia wanna push this button is that it's also about moving up the chain, you know, from just being a miner, mining this and send it outside to being a power producer. So, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with these ambitions. So, and number three reason is also that, and what also, what we hear from our officials in Davos, they saying, we want to learn from the best. You know, we want to learn from the best. They are saying, hey, we're not going to reinvent this. You know, look, we are not going to invent this ourselves. We're not going to invent this ourselves. We're not going to reinvent new things. So they want to partner with countries that have been doing this for decades, you know, who have been, you know, who knows, who knows, who have the knowledge, the know-how, the technology and all that. They want to follow the strict also. We also want to follow the strict international safety rules set by the Global Atomic Energy Watchdog. So they are even looking at, a new, maybe a smaller type of nuclear reactors, you know, that might be safer. And talking of safer, maybe there's something that we need to look into. And as I said, the story that I refer you to, that's also highlight that. Yeah, a nuclear reactor that's much safer, a smaller one that's much safer and easier maybe to manage. So, but the plan is big, okay? The plan is big. And at this point in time, we have already approved a whole nuclear industrial strategy. So we already have a nuclear industrial strategy in place and we are changing the laws. They are changing old laws. The old laws are being changed. So, and they are even planning to create a new Nuclear Institute of Namibia. What do you think about that? A Nuclear Institute of Namibia to train our people and drive this whole thing forward. You know? So, as I said, there's nothing wrong being ambitious. All right? Nothing wrong at all being ambitious. So, well, when you hear that, it sounds ambitious. It sounds patriotic. It sounds like a plan for a powerful, self-reliant Namibia. Okay? So, and it excites you. But, and always in here on unpacking, there is always this big but. I'm not talking the back end, but a big but. However, okay. Now, my question now is, and you will understand. Okay. I will explain. Is it the right plan for us right now? I'm not talking about maybe sometimes in the future. But I'm talking about right now. All right? Now, let's get real for a minute. And let's put on our now critical thinking caps for a moment. Okay? Don't just consume what you hear. Start thinking. Because this is our future we are talking about. Eh? And I want to hear what you think about this as well. So, now, first question. Let's have the first question is the one that is, I think the one that is on everyone's mind. Your mind, my mind, probably your mind too. I think the cost. Okay. The cost. So nuclear power plants, as we know, wherever they are being established, they are not cheap. Okay? They cost billions of dollars. Billions. With a big B. Okay? Where is that money gonna come? Where is going to come from? Given where we are, the reason why is that the right plan right now? Now, given where you are, Namibia is a country with many needs. At this point in time, we have so many needs, really pressing needs. We need hospitals. We need schools. We have children actually being, we have children in overcrowded schools. We have children who don't have, we are not actually, you know, found places yet. Yeah. So we need roads. In our towns, in, you know, in our villages, we need, and how can I forget this? We need to tackle unemployment. Two important pressing issues. Unemployment, housing. Eh? Now, you understand my question now? Why I'm asking, is this, you know, would this be, you know, would this be, would it be right plan for us right now? Would that be a right plan for us right now? Can we really afford to bet so much money? Because this is a lot of money. Can we afford to bet so much money on one single massive project? Well, you tell me. What if we spend all that money and something goes wrong? Is this the best use of our national treasury? Well, something can go wrong, and that actually brings me now to my second big questions. The risk. You talk about the cost, now talk about the risk. When we hear the word nuclear, many of us think about two names. We think about the Chernobyl. Is it Chernobyl? Is it pronounced Chernobyl? Chernobyl in Ukraine. You know, you remember in 1986 accident, you know, and nuclear accident, and also, you know, the famous Fukushima in Japan, the site of the 2011 Fukushima Daiichi, you know, nuclear disaster. So whenever you hear that nuclear, you know, those events come to your mind. So yes, these are places where things went terribly, terribly, terribly wrong. So the government say, our government has said, well, we will follow international safety standard. But, well, standard on paper are one thing. Reality is another. You know, you can have all the, you know, this is what we're going to do on paper. Now, in that stories that I'm telling you of David Shombe, it's also asking, it's talking about professionals, you know, this risk, disaster risk management professionals. So who will guarantee our safety? What happens if there is an accident? What about the waste? Okay? Nuclear waste stays dangerous they actually stay dangerous for thousands of years. Yeah, for thousands of years. Now, where in Namibia are we planning to store it? Eh? In our beautiful desert? Should we store it there? Near our precious groundwater? Now, this is a question that affects our land, okay? Our environment, and probably our children's children. So it's something that we need to think very, very, very carefully. And that leads me to my third question. The people. Who is going to build and run this nuclear power station? Because according to that story, we don't have these professionals. Please do read it. Okay? Do read it. We don't have this professional. Do we have Namibian engineers and physicists and technicians with the right skill right now? Do we have them right now? Oh, we are going to build an institution. So the plan is to create a nuclear institute. Eh? Which is very great for a long term. That's no doubt about it. We need to do that if we're going to do this. So, but a nuclear plant is incredibly complex. In a short term, we just going to be, you know, importing a whole workforce, you know, from other countries to manage our critical energy infrastructure? Are we going to do that? So what does, and then what does that mean for jobs and skills transfer for Namibia? And we know, I mean, there are other examples that we have, you know, in other areas. And finally, maybe the political question is the most political question of all. The partners. So the Mbwende talks about partners. So the government says we need to partner with pioneers, you know. But who are these pioneers? Are they coming here to help Namibia, or are they coming here to make a profit and sell us? They will be now selling us their technology. Will this partnership be on our terms, or will be giving away control of our most vulnerable sources, like other, other sectors as well? So our uranium and our energy future, in an exchange, maybe they will come, and then, you know, in exchange for their expertise. There's always that transaction, you know. Okay, you don't have an expertise, we will then take control of these, and, you know. So we have seen this story before in Africa, haven't we? We have. How do we make sure this time is different? I think that's what we're looking at. So there is it. So the promise is huge. Energy independence, economic growth, and becoming a powerhouse in Africa. So the vision of Namibia that not only mines its resources, but uses them to build its own future. So that's why I said the promise is quite huge, but the risks are just as huge as well. The financial cost, where do we gonna get money? The environmental danger. So do we have the expertise? So the question of skills and the risk of entering into partnership that may not serve our national interest. So there is always that risk. So the government has made its choice. They have made its choice. They have made their choice. They are moving forward vigorously. Okay, they are moving forward. But this is a decision that belongs to all of us. It is our land, it's our money, it's our future. So, exactly, and that's why we bring it up here for you to, you know, to say something. So I'm opening up the lines right now. The number to call is 083-366-091. I want to hear from you. Are you excited about nuclear-powered Namibia? Are you excited, or are you terrified? You could be terrified, like I am. Do you trust the government to get this right? Do you think the benefit outweigh the risk? So let's have a real conversation. And is nuclear power the key to unlocking Namibia's future, or is it a gamble we simply cannot afford to take? 0833, the line is open. 0833-66091. Let's unpack this together. So you're welcome to come through.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Well, that's right. That's right. Our time is about 46 minutes past the hour of 8. It is Friday, and normally Friday is quite, slow. Well, download the Eagle FM app if you want to remain connected to Eagle FM. So this is where the world is going, guys. You know, in 2 to 3 to 4 years, you will have everyone, every broadcasting on the app, you know. So that's where we're going, and we just introduce you the future to you. All right, so let's get to a caller. Very good morning, welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, man. How are you?
I'm all right, and you?
I'm okay.
Very much happy. This is what I wanted.
That's what you were talking about, I remember.
When the news broke out in the newspaper, and I said, exactly, that is what we want.
Yeah,
this is what we want. Because this is an industry on its own.
Mm.
You cannot have a steel factory. Let me say not compared, but like the one in Germany or India and so on. You must have that power.
Yeah,
you must have that power.
And the irony is that we are the third, you know, in the world, first on the continent.
Tell people, this is what I used to tell people, and they never believe me.
Yeah.
I used to tell them so in the group and say, look, guys, Namibia is classified as the third
producer.
Uranium producer. Mm. I think the first is Russia, and then the second is Kazakhstan, and then Namibia.
Yeah.
So why don't we have a nuclear power station?
Even a small one, a small type one, a nuclear reactor.
A single one.
Yeah.
So, if we can build that, but I think they must at least build it that side of Kavango or Kavango, then we can supply countries like Zambia, Botswana, and others electricity.
Yeah. What about the concern, the environmental concern?
My friend, there is nothing that a human being does without, how do we say?
Without a risk.
Water kills people. Can you say you don't want to? You look at the advantage. You equate the advantage that you get out of the water. Can you say you are not going to make use of the water?
Yeah.
There should always be an alternative. The creator, God, has given that for a reason. It was not just put there to be abandoned, to be there. He gave it to you to make use of it. Those that don't have it, they want it. They say, man, if I was Namibian, obviously, I would have taken advantage of that.
Yeah.
But as we are saying, no, the environmental, there is always a way. That's why God has given a human being a wisdom to think as to how to go around these things.
Yeah.
Why would you have to say? You see, I was laughing one day. People wanted to dig a dam. When the water comes in, people wanted to increase the volumes of the water that comes in so that it can actually extend it to a long term.
Yeah.
Where people have to bring their water. People are talking about, no, our kids are going to die. What? Kids are already dying.
Yeah.
You put a provision to prevent this. Safety measure must always be there.
Mm.
You see, for me, I'm happy. And these are the things that I wanted our government to think of. The one that is left is what? is the refinery.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, that's all. Then we have got industry. Then we can talk about industry. You can't talk about the fourth world revolutionaries.
Industrial revolution, yeah.
Those are policies of the globalists. They know what they were talking about. They were talking about digitalizing the world so that they can control it. That's what they are talking about.
Mm. Hmm? So the other issue is then, this is going to cost us a lot of money. That's going to cost us billions and billions. And at this point in time, Namibia is really, you know, there are a lot of pressing issues. We're talking about, you know, unemployment. We're talking about housing. So do you think that, is it the right time to move that?
Uranium itself is a commodity. It does make money.
Yeah.
Why do you sell uranium? Or are you saying that the uraniums are going to, you have to reserve that for a nuclear? It's only a time to, amount of uranium that is needed to react to the nuclear power, the nuclear. We are classified as the third. Mm. Why don't you sell it? Make money at the outside and then pay for the money.
Yeah.
That's a commodity. It's not something that we are just talking about, Jabamomea or something else. This is a commodity that each and everybody need. The Russians, they need it. Even they have, they are the first. They still need it because they have got more nuclear. Eh?
Yeah, but that's actually mean we have to enter new. First of all, we have to come up with new policies. Maybe not new policies, but we have in the way we're doing things now have to change, you know, for us to be able to do this. Yeah,
of course. Yeah,
mm.
That is the thing. But I'm happy. I'm happy.
Good.
Mm. That is if that took. Take place is that the dust take off the ground, obviously.
It has, because there is a strategy in place, there is a start, maybe not, and they say this is something they rigorously, you know, pursuing. A nuclear industry strategy is already approved by cabinet, and the planning of creating a nuclear institute of Namibia. So. Yeah, the groundwork is being done.
And we have to align with Russia.
Yeah.
Because even, and also the Iranians, but the Iranians, they are already building about 25 of them, and with the help of Russia also.
Yeah, well, hopefully, maybe it's, America is not going to put a tariff on us actually dealing with Iran.
let them do that. Let them do that. We don't care about anymore. The world have moved away from that. If you have listened to what Mark Carney have said, at the World Economic Forum, it rings the bells. It means that the future is within the BRICS. And then we have specifically told them that, look, I have signed trade agreements with various countries. 90% of those countries are the BRICS. I just called in the programs of the previous programs whereby I emphasize and say, look, Canada, was imposed or tariff is of 100%. By America. And then they were also forced to do the same by America to sanction the Chinese. But when Mark Khan comes and he overturned all these things, the agriculture sectors of Canada was completely destroyed because of the tariff and the sanctions. Because these are countries, these are considered or regarded as allies of the United States of the West.
So
anything that the West does, they have to follow. So Justin Trudeau was this subordinate or whatever of the Westerners. If they say jump, they will ask how high should we jump?
Mm.
And then they try to decouple from the Chinese. And this destroyed the oil industries and a lot of industries in Canada. So he went there and said, look, and then also the EV, the electrical cars.
Yeah.
You know, right now as we are speaking, the Chinese are the most producer for the EV car.
Yeah.
Very much reliable and very much cheap. Now, in Europe and in Canada, in the Western specifically, these industries of the Chinese EV cars were sanctioned. So Mark Carney went there and said, look, I need to shake off the shackles of the globalists, of these hegemon policies of the Western.
Mm.
I know I am one of them, but I'm not going along with them.
Yeah.
So can you? Then Xi Jinping said, yeah. And then he said, okay, we are going to buy your agriculture product. We are going to buy your oil. And then Mark Carney said, yeah, we are going to open up for your EV, 49,000 EV cars must come in the market of Canada per year, each year 49.
Yeah.
You see? A lot of trade agreement that they have signed with the Indians, with the Iranians and all those things. And he said it in the face of the globalists. And you know, Trump is not happy.
Yeah, and we're definitely going to see a lot of a trade war and in this year and the year to come, definitely. Yeah.
It doesn't. Yeah, it has to be there, but we must just buckle up. We must also just be patient. Yeah. Along the lines, along the future, there things are going to be fine.
And yeah, these
are,
definitely.
You know, you need to understand. Yeah. Yeah, these are the things that they have been putting moratoriums on us, so that because they didn't want us to be self-sufficient.
Mm.
When you are energy security. That means you are on your own.
Exactly.
We are talking about gas, and electricity, and all those things.
Yeah.
These are the main purpose of these are the main pillars of product.
Yeah. I mean, energy security and development comes through this. Yeah. Mm.
Of course.
Mm.
So that is what we are expecting. But I think the Oshungosha Bible that they were actually building.
Yeah.
Is now turned out because they are fighting among each other, and we have to take we have to take advantage of that.
Exactly.
Trump is threatening. He wants to take Green Range because he wants to diversify the minerals, the supply chains of minerals.
Yeah, Venezuela's, and you know now he's turning to Greenland. Yeah.
Of course. People didn't understand that. People went along with the pretext.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a narco-trailist, it's a drug, what. People went along with that.
Yeah, that's
exactly that. Like now, in terms of Greenland, he has made Russia and China the bogeyman, Katana Comedia.
Yeah, exactly.
And then people who doesn't understand, they go along with that one. But what Trump wants is the supply chain, is diversify of the supply chains of rare earth minerals and oil and gas. The study has actually showed that Greenland is rich in minerals like oil, gas, and rare earth. These are silver mine, aluminium, and so forth. A lot of them, they are there, and that is what he wants. So in order for him to take it, he has to come up with a
And as you can see, when you look at this, you can see that actually Trump is, this is a war against China and Russia, where they stop any interest of these countries in other countries because of those commodities. So in Venezuela, the same thing, in Greenland, the same thing. So when you look at that, you know, it's this exactly what it is all about, you know?
Yeah.
And in Africa, the same thing, you know?
The same thing, of course.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm. So this is what we're expecting, but the empire is gradually dying.
Crumbling.
When you're looking at the USA as the world reserve currency, it used to trade to 88 to 89%.
Yeah.
And then it comes to 75.
Yeah.
Now it's down to 55. What does that tell you?
Mm.
The reason why they are persecuting the Chinese and the Russians is because they are the backbone of the BRICS.
Yeah.
And they are the ones that are conducting businesses outside the dollar. And you know, the agreement that the Canadians signed with the Chinese and the Indians, they are also going to be connected to SIP. Yeah. Because Chinese will ask business transactions outside the dollar again in Canada is with that, because the policies issued by America or by Trump of the tariff was actually looking to undermine the market or the commodities of the Canadians.
Yeah. All right. Let's see what others have to say, okay?
Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks for coming through, yeah. All right. 0833-66091. 0833-66091. And we're talking about Namibia. Are you excited about a nuclear-powered Namibia? Okay? Or are you, you could be also terrified, or you could be also, do you trust the government to get this right? And do you think benefits outweigh the risk? So, if you want to share and you want to contribute to our first segment, to our story, to our first stories, to our first item, 0833-66091 is the number you can dial. And we are coming to you live from the Ondangwa studio. All right, so let's have a commercial break. And while you are preparing yourself to dial those numbers, and if we don't get anybody coming through, so we will move on to our next stories. That's a world has entered an era of a global water bankruptcy. That is a new United report, United Nations report. We're going to look at that, but I'm waiting for your calls.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Oh, well. Good morning. You are tuned into Unpacking the Day. And, well, let's get to our next item. So we are talking about a frightening new term, you know, that comes out of the United Nations. It's not water scarcity. It's not water stress that we use. These are the terms that used to be, that we used to. So they say those words are too soft, too temporal, you know, too temporally, you know. So the new term is water bankruptcy. Now, according to a major new UN report, the world has officially entered this era with permanent, irreversible consequences. Now, let's unpack this. Okay, let's see what is this is all about. Now, that's actually a powerful phrase. Water bankruptcy. It's a powerful phrase. It's not just about scarcity. It's about living beyond, when we talk about bankruptcy. Now, it means it's about living beyond our, as they put it, hydrological means. We're living beyond our hydrological means as a globe. Spending water faster than nature and actually can replace it. So we're actually spending more water faster than nature, than God's nature can actually replace it. Now, okay, think about nature as your salary. Okay, maybe this makes sense. So think of nature as your salary. Now, rain, snow, rivers, aquifers, you know. But for many years, globally, we have been spending far, far more than we earn. We have been over pumping our groundwaters. We're draining our rivers, destroying our water, our wetlands. So that means we have been, you know, spending far, far more than what we earn, you know, in this time, then faster than nature can actually replace it. So we have been taking out massive loans from our water saving. As an example, this is just an allegory and a scenery. Okay. So that means we have taken out massive loans from our water saving, loan we can never pay back. Now we cannot be able to pay back. And now the bank is calling. The account is empty. The account is empty. So the report gives us some really grilling examples. They're talking about Kabul, you know, the town, the city of Kabul, for example, could be the first major city to literally run out of water. Talking about Mexico City, it's also sinking because they are pumping so much water from underground that the land is actually collapsing. So these are some of the examples in the report. And the U.S. Southwest states, those states are actually fighting like cats and dogs over the shrinking, you know, Colorado River. So, and they are fighting, you know, like cats and dogs. So, and here is what, you know, when they, you know, the transfer, football transfer expert, you know, when they about to announce something that is really, you know, changing, maybe news breaking is like, here is the bomber. Okay. Here is the bomber. Now, nearly 4 billion people face water scarcity for at least 1 month every single year. So the report warns that many regions are living beyond their hydrological means. So it's like you're living beyond your salary means, you know, you live beyond your salary. So think of that in terms of now of global water. So it's like, you know, it's like maxing out your credit card and still thinking you can shop until, well, the debt collectors arrives, you know, until the debt collectors arrives. So, but here's the key. Here is the key point. Now, the report is actually make. So it's actually said calling this a crisis make us think it will pass. When you call something, it's a crisis that, well, we will, okay. It's something that will actually pass. It's a crisis, but we will find a way actually to deal with that. Bankruptcy. Now, this new term, a bankruptcy, it's a new and harsh reality, you have to adapt to. It means that's, things are like this now. It's not a crisis. This is how the way things are. And you have to find a way to adapt to that. You can't just go back to your old spending habits. This is the reality where you find yourself in. So we are water bankruptcy, you know. So not crisis. Now, let's bring this home to Namibia. So we already know what scarcity feels like. We know that in Namibia, drought, drought in Kunene, water rationing in Rundu, borehole running dry in rural areas. We know this. We're already experiencing this. So, and remember, we are a desert country. We're a desert country. That means our salary from nature is very small. So our salary from nature is very small, and climate change could make it even smaller. Yeah? So the global water bankruptcy, you know, it's not some faraway problems. It's not something that is we're just hearing now into a report. It is actually knocking at our doors. Yeah? It's actually, in fact, it is actually knocking on our doors. So when our dam, when our dam sit low for years on end, is that a temporary crisis? Should we say that is actually a temporary crisis? It has been for years. Or is it our new normal? Isn't that our new normal? It is. So when we have to implement strict water restriction in Windhoek, are we just managing crisis? Now that has become our new normal. Eh? Are we just managing crisis? Or are we in fact already adapting to a state of water bankruptcy? Are we not already actually adapting to a state of water bankruptcy? Now, the report says the biggest user of water globally is agriculture. Now, that's a big one for us. Now, that is a big one for us. So, Namibia is an arid country with significant agricultural sector. Now, how do we balance that? How do we balance that? How are we going, you know, are we going the right, you know, as I'm saying, then how do we balance that? Are we growing the right crops for our climate? So we need those, we need the expert to, I remember listening to one of the interview, I think of Tata Nalvanda or it could be Franz, you know, it was Nalvanda. So that, you know, when we talk about, when we're predicting the rain, you know, the rain, where it's going to be raining. So we are so far behind. We are so far behind, but we're just talking about it's going to rain in the north, in the north, in this area. It does tell, while in other countries, they can tell exactly where it's going to rain and the pattern of rain in those specific area. You know, like village to village, then you will tell actually, you know, the village of this area, you must prepare yourself, because the rain, it's going to rain this much. And, you know, so now when you just talk, it's going to rain in the north, you know, then people maybe in Umsati started actually preparing Mputo Davo. Mbori okutakuro kwa konfiyeg. So, those are the things that we are very, 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 very far, technology-wise, to be even precise, in our prediction of the rain pattern. So what I'm saying is that how do we then balance that? If it's an issue now, as it's agriculture globally, water globally is whatever. The biggest use of water globally is agriculture. So then we have to find a way now to see how we can balance that, because that is, as I said, that it's a big for us. Now we need to see, are we growing the right crop for our climate? Are our irrigation method efficient enough? Maybe we still use the old systems it doesn't spare water enough. So our irrigation method, are they efficient enough? Are we too spending more than our hydrological income? Because that's the question. And where is our expert to actually guide us in terms of what it comes now to agriculture? Are we too, at this point already, spending more than our hydrological income? That's a question. So let's hear from the caller. Good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, Dr. Mike, how are you?
I'm fine, man. And yourself?
I'm all right, Dr. Mike.
Hmm.
Yeah, let us start with a first story.
Yeah.
Segment about learning.
The nuclear power.
Yeah, nuclear power.
Hmm. Mm.
You see, now, the thing is that, I think when you look at where we are, and they look what nuclear is doing in the whole world.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really like some people are benefiting out of, even though their countries, they don't have any mine for uranium.
Mm.
Yeah, look, most of the European countries, especially the developed one,
yeah,
they're having nuclear power stations. Why so difficult for countries like Namibia? I know. Maybe it can be difficult when it comes to resources like money.
Mm.
But for sure, we can tighten our belt. Just like the way we are the first place, like we prioritizing unnecessary things like the demo we put up in the south. But still, it's a lot of money. We spend that lot of money, but we don't see any result.
But the other thing is this, maybe I should have also asked, you know, the first caller that comes in. It's just coming onto my mind. Wouldn't be, because actually establishing, actually make, having a nuclear power, it's going to cost us billions and billions. Have we done enough, how would I say it? Enough, not research, but enough, look, I'm talking about renewable energies. These are things that we have for free.
Yeah, exactly.
So have we explored that enough? Yeah, the word I wanted is explore. Explored that enough? So that now we spend even, we don't have even to do, you know, to spend these billions and billions, because we have something that is available right now. You
for
know,
free.
For free. Eh? Have we explored that enough?
Not really.
And
but
really now, let's start with something like that. And then, you know, think of that maybe in the future. Because what I'm saying is that even if look at countries that even have oil.
Yeah.
Those countries are not really benefiting.
Exactly.
Ordinary people are not. It doesn't mean if you have a nuclear power, that means now electricity is going to be cheap. Maybe people are looking at, we spend so much billion and billion into building this. So it might not be cheaper. You understand?
Yeah? No, for sure, Michael, if you look nuclear.
Yeah.
And depend of, if it is cheaper or expensive. I think unless we become so greedy.
Yeah.
Because if for sure we establish nuclear, I'm telling you, we might end up even spending $1. whatever they are charging now.
Yeah.
Because now look, if we are able to come up with a nuclear and then the power station, we are able to supply maybe the whole side given.
The question is, Mandume, the question is this. Where would actually the government get the money to build the nuclear power? Would it then be a private kind of a company? If it's become a private company, you know, a private could be a private investor, local or international one. You have no control of that. Do you understand? So the price, how they will sell this, it's not a social responsibility. It's not like it's a social responsibility to make. The electricity cheaper. This is actually a commodity, as someone said, now that we can sell. That institution will sell that, you know, to other, to the neighboring, but it won't be cheaper even for you.
Yeah.
It's Michael, the same thing come, like fish.
Let me come in, Michael.
Yeah.
You see now, if we make it a partnership, government and the private, okay, like now, what is happening to our local authority?
Yeah.
You see that if we get the water directly straight from NamWater, it will be cheaper. Or our power from NamPower. It will be cheaper than adding the value. I think we can come up with the methods with the way they are, we have control what? Electric control board. Even though we know that they are too much exciting because of their what salary, I think, maybe. That's why the price is going up every day.
Yeah.
But if we come up with a nuclear reactor plant, I'm sure we're able to demand why we are paying so much if this thing we are getting in the ground in this way. This can be also the same, like you see now, if NamWater able to charge the people from rural area who are not connected to, I mean, who are not residing in the local authority, like a 1 cubic meter is even like maybe even what? $5 or $4. Comparing to town, that cubic meter can go up to like what? 70. You see? And it is really a issue if we in Namibia now we are serious to protect and protect our, and also to grow our economy. I think nuclear is the way.
No, no, definitely. I definitely agree with that. But what I'm looking at it is that, first of all, it's the investment. Where are we going to get the money? The cost
Let
of that.
Follow the money the way okay. we used to grow.
Now. Yeah. And I'm looking at other sectors in a way how we're talking. I was just giving you an example of fish. Why, hake? Why don't you eat hake every night? If you want, why don't you eat mackerel, you know, fish?
You know the problem when it comes to quotas?
Yeah.
The problem we are giving to individuals.
Yeah. The thing is that it's because it's in the hands of actually in the hands of foreigners. Okay.
No, the problem is we have in Namibia also but the problem is that they don't have a boat, but that is not a reason. What they do, they get a license, they sell it. Then the government is not controlling that. That is a problem I think we will find ourselves.
Yeah.
Instead of giving individually, why not giving the groups of people?
Yeah.
No, I'm always comparing giving like a soccer football club in Namibia. You give it to one quarter to a soccer tula tula, one to KK, one to African Star, one to Tega and so on. Do you know how many people are going to be employed by Tega alone?
Yeah.
Through that. Instead of giving our in-law and our daughters and our son and our niece, that is what is happening.
And
they get in those quarters.
Yeah.
They go to Spain, Finland, or wherever to sell off.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's just an example to see that the way we do things, like if... Okay, I'm thinking in a very simple way. It's to say, look, if we need to change the way we do trading now, so that the uranium now can actually create revenue that in 20 years actually we can be able to build a reactor. I mean, a power plant. You understand? But if we have to get money somewhere else, you know
how much are we getting?
Yeah.
Do you know how much we are getting from? How many percent do we get in this uranium which you are talking about?
How much is it? 3 or from?
I think it's 3%.
Yeah, I think it's 3%. That's
the machinery that we have. They are mistaking our mind.
8%.
But you are having 3%.
Yeah, no, on top of my head, I can't remember. But it's not much. It's not much.
No, it's 3%. Yeah. For sure. It's 3% which the Namibian government are getting.
Yeah.
And that's losing uranium.
And that's what we need to change. I think that's what we need to change. We either start buying share from something that's belonged to us.
Oh, we can look back in
our that's the only way.
Now
that's,
we are going to have a credit to buy a share in your own
resources. No, that's the only way we can get it back. That's the only way we can get it back.
No, what you can do,
yeah,
if we put up a refinery, we have to push the Chinese to invest in Namibia. Because they cannot just ship it out the way they are doing it now.
Yeah. So
that's the only way to kill the kids.
If the uranium, if say for example the contract is about 50 years, normally these contracts are long. They are really, really long.
No. You guys were saying this, there was not a new government which we are now. Now we are talking about a new thing.
The government, the new government cannot just come and say, okay, we tear up all the contract that has been there. No, that cannot be done. You know?
We can check that because we even try to bring the new players on the board. You remember that the Russian, they're interested in uranium.
Yeah, you can renegotiate. I mean, maybe the exploring a new whatever.
A new way.
Yeah, new.
A new way to push off the greedy people like the Chinese. What they are doing for aluminium.
Yeah.
There's a way because there are a lot of people interested in that, including even in Canada, which we are talking about. Rio Tinto, it was there, and they still want to come back.
Yeah, but the thing is also this, when you want to make changes, you can make changes in terms of policies, but what do you have? Do you have the skills? Do you have the capital? Do you have, all you have to answer, because they said, okay, if you're going to own this for, let's say, for example, 30%, now, 30% is not just, okay, on the paper, here is 30%, now whatever. No, 30% is about, it's about money, you know, that you actually need to bring in. Yeah. You understand? And those are the challenges, both domestic investors and also, the government, you know? So.
I do understand. You remember the other time when you were having argument that, you know, government are pushing for 51% of Namibian owners.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Mm.
Then we are saying where they are going to get money. And now remember one thing, that the Tramba is giving us a lot of favor, only that we cannot see it as Africans. When they is pushing around everybody, there we can get a chance for us to negotiate with who want to come on board.
Yeah.
But remember one thing, European or American, they cannot do anything without Africa. That's for sure.
That we understand. We understand that they cannot, but even when you negotiation, you have to create a position of power. You understand? And at this point in time, we don't have a position of power. Even we have the resources. So we have now to turn these resources into a position of power, either as a group, as a bloc, like SADC, or as a bloc, as a Africa Trade Free Trade Area. So, because individual, we cannot win.
I do understand.
Yeah.
But the thing is that I think the world is teaching us a lot of reasons where we should be able to be independent on ourselves.
Yeah, definitely.
Remember one thing, that we rely on too much, not in Africa, but we let that listen to the people who come from those countries I'm mentioning. It's like you're like American.
Yeah.
Or ASEAN. But remember one thing, that now we are talking about nuclear power plants. And remember, we have a country like, the old SADC.
Yeah. Just a quick commercial quickly, and then we can round off here.
All right.
Mm.
Imbaya rire ombwa nai epetwa weda kwa ombuni kire ombe ombi hukusha. Njiviro yoye irire ombupu o hatane na wina ikare no masa kumurungu wa indu. Weli rongere kusha umune ondengu okuura kwa imba. Una ovyu media peke o londola mirongo vitatu na hambu umwe mumwe.
So, kwika ovinki no kukara norupa ondando ya peke yokia nja Oshimariva. Olo peresente dano kumyeze vitatu moshimariva. Olo peresente omurongo kumyeze hambu umwe moshimariva. Olo peresente omirongo ivari na dano. Kwa miezi ya mulongwa na Vivari Moshimarif. Itororera on Dengu, Jimayungura na Wakove, na Wina onyano kite. Ashiesho imba te kupe oshimariva shishihina omarihiro. Imba o maurongane no uyegu haka enena. Itako na wina rishangita jinon.
All right.
Yes, Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah, let me round it off.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing is that, Mike, when we are talking about, if you are serious, the whole SADC can come on board.
Mm.
Because they know already that we have a capacity of what? Uranium with the third nation in the world.
Yeah.
Following Canada. Even though I think we are maybe number one or number two there. Because remember, Canada, they've been extracting the what uranium in our country,
yeah.
And maybe they're now they're having the biggest deposit. That's why they are second in the world.
Yeah, because imagine this actually now this whole power plant becomes a joint venture of three or four countries. South Africa, yeah. Botswana, Zambia, you know, and then all contribute to that project, and it becomes the regional project. So then that would make sense.
Yeah,
that would make sense.
That is the angle also I'm looking at. And the other angle is when we look, Russia and they come on board, that they want to help Namibia. As long as they're able to get the resource and they're able to make us a plantation for us to supply electricity. Remember one thing that NamPower was approached.
Yeah.
And then later on, we heard that NamPower was getting money from International Monetary Funds for to increase their capacity for generating what electricity, what whatsoever.
Yeah.
So up to now, we don't know how far is that negotiation went. Because they never have a response.
Mm.
You see? That's why I'm saying sometimes our leaders, the people we have in the position, they are the one who are screwing up everything. Anyway, Mike, let us leave that one. I want to talk about water quickly.
Just two minutes or so. Yeah. Mm.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You see, when it comes to water crisis, I think
this is no longer water crisis. It's actually water bankruptcy.
Bankruptcy. Yeah.
Yeah.
the new term of water bankruptcy.
Yeah.
I like that one.
Yeah.
You see, the thing is that we as let me bring it at home. As a Namibian,
yeah.
We never had done enough to invest in water.
Mm.
Why I'm saying so, even though as a Namibian, we're supposed even to think already like a crazy stuff, like taking water from the sea.
Mm.
Because then you never finish that sea water. Bring it to the mainland.
Yeah.
That is only when then we start even what they do. Separating the water, salt water, I mean, extracting the salt out of the water. Yeah. Because it's what the other countries are doing it, even to get salt.
Yeah.
That's salt, the normal salt for them. But here in Namibia, I think we are too much relaxed. Mm.
The biggest challenge we face is that we really, honestly speaking, we don't really have expertise say, for example, other country already, let's say, for example, United States, you know, they already, you have people who already forecast, you know, the economic, trend for 15 to 10 years already. You understand?
Yeah, exactly.
And in forecasting that, they would then align their economic goals towards they already see, you know, 10 years from now. For us, we only react to what is happening, you know, the inflation goes up, we react to that. The whatever, you know, we just react to what is happening. We don't know what's going to happen in 10 years. You understand?
Yeah.
And we lack those expertise. It's the same thing with water. We can't plan. We're only reacting. Oh, there's not enough. You know, the water on the groundwater now is finished. What do we do? You know, we never knew that it's going to be finished. We don't know how much it is that is left and what do we need to plan around that. you know, how to conserve it, how to use it, and how, you know, we're just realizing, man, we are draining our rivers. And we never really know whether the rain gonna rain again, or, you know.
But the problem, I think, we are too much relaxed.
Yeah.
When you are too much relaxed and you don't know, maybe we are too much comfortable that way. Let me put it that way.
It's just that we don't know. We really don't.
We cannot really tell me that we need the experts when it comes to this thing. If I, by nature, we supposed to understand how the thing, nature operates. Like now,
check the
if we don't have a frog,
exactly,
we have a drought, and we learned that from the past 10 years, yeah. And we're still waiting for, next, we are still doing cross-finger farming.
Yeah, but for now, we could have actually learned. We could have learned the pattern and be able to predict that within 10 years, this is actually the pattern, would say, with the changes of climate in terms of this and this and this, this is how the rainfall likely to, you know. And then we have our plan based on that. You understand? Yeah. But for now, we only wait until the flood comes.
Yeah, sorry, Michael, to cut you off.
Yeah.
The thing is that when I'm telling you that we don't need the expert, because we learned from the experience, isn't it? And from our experience, we're supposed to use it, where we know, we say, okay, if it's a drought, then we already dig a lot of earth dam, which you can keep the water, and the people are able to do their plantation when it's not raining.
Yeah.
And when the flood is coming, yes, we are already prepared because we have a lot of FDM, which you can keep it to water.
Yeah.
You see,
yeah.
We don't need any expert in that.
No. The expert we need, I need somebody who can analyze this pattern for 10 to 20 years to come. That I need, because I need to foresee that in a distance, so that I have, when I'm talking about 2030, sometimes we're talking about 2030, but we didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't know that. We didn't know when we were in 1990. We didn't know about climate change. Do you understand?
Exactly.
But then the climate change has actually spoiled your planning.
Yeah.
But if we knew, if we have some people who can be able to learn the pattern of the weather or the economy and things, and can be able to tell us in 20 years from now, this is more likely to happen, then we know how to prepare ourselves and our goals, you know?
You know, Michael, like now we are facing the trade war. How old are we?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Those are, now we see what is happening. Let's see what others have to say. Yeah.
All right, my brother.
Great. Yeah, in honest truth, we don't have experts. We just don't have experts. We don't have institutions, really institution that really, you know, dedicated. We don't fund those. We don't fund research. We don't fund, you know, we don't set up institution that really focus on issues as we're talking about it. Eh? The reason why we don't plan, you know, why didn't we achieve 2030? Because there are a lot of things that we didn't know that would happen. We couldn't even anticipate it. So we can't really say, no, we cannot look at 2030 and say, no, we have failed. Do you understand? We can, but we can't really say we have failed. We have failed because we actually haven't risk management that he was talking about in the article that I'm talking about. We don't have professional that can be able to do that. If they are, what are they doing? A very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. How are you, man?
Fine, thank you. How are you too?
We all right.
Good.
Mm.
So, was there a skill audit, maybe on the wider scale?
You disappear. I can hear you now. I can hear you now. Okay.
Skill audit. Was it done in various professions? to determine whether we have got the capacity or not in some of those areas of concern.
Mm.
So have we done, was there skill audit done so that we can then say it, yes, confidently, that we do not have the skill in this area.
That has been spoken all the time here. You know, a mismatch, our higher institutions, what they are offering, it doesn't match what the market.
Yes,
you know,
the mismatch does not mean that there are no skills.
Well, if you have a skill but you cannot apply, look, if you have a skill that you cannot apply, you know, then what is the point?
So now the skill can be applied, the knowledge, but if it is mismatch, that means there's just need for realignment to be done, so that those people can then be in their own areas where they have got knowledge, where they are trained in this kind of things.
Okay.
You just do some realignment.
What are you arguing?
Might be there.
What are the point you're making?
My point is that was there a skill, general skill audit done for the country to determine that, yes, there's no capacity in this area, there's no capacity in this area?
Are you asking now the country to do that, or are you saying there was an audit that had been done? Yeah.
In ourselves, we can also do it. The institution can do it. The individual people can as well do it.
Yeah.
And they determine whether there's a capacity, there's a skill in this area, because sometimes we are just saying, no, we don't have the skillful personnel and things like that.
Right. You know what, Angobona? I definitely agree with you. I agree with you as a principle, and I really agree with you. As a principle, there must be some kind of, you know, so skills audit. And then we can now be able to say, look, if we are talking about green hydrogen, do we have the skills of what this requires? If we talk about oil and gas, do you have a skill of what this requires? So, and then, By doing this audit, we will be then be able to say, we don't have the skills. Let them start, you know, sending people. To larger extent, that is actually happening. That's actually happening. As we come into new sectors, we realize that we don't have skill in that. And there are people that are actually being sent now to prepare them.
Yeah, because there could be some skill personnel there who are sitting idle, and maybe like this morning David was saying, one of this company, I don't know whether it's Aaron Road Authority or whatever, who are asking for people to go and register, whether it's for employment or maybe they just want to come up with a skill database to determine whether they have got right people in that profession. So I'm saying, yes, it's true. There is a need, so that even maybe because they have also said nursing and education, some of those areas are oversupplied, maybe, and they want to somehow slow down and then capacitate the other areas where they feel maybe there's no the skill deficiency and issues of that nature. But it also help us. At one point, the one from NAS, Kudumo, mentioned that, yes, it appears as if people are just talking about unavailability of skill and all these things, but they haven't done this skill audit.
Yeah, no, that I agree. That I agree. I definitely agree with that. And the thing is, you know, what we're talking about, which is actually a good point you're making, is that when you do that, then you can be able now to say, let's say, for example, talk about the drought or flooding, you know, drought and flooding. There has become a pattern. Now, we need any institutions
that can tell us now that in 20 years, in 20 years or 10 years to come, this is how the pattern will go. Then that would help us actually now to prepare. The reason why we found ourselves in emergency is because we don't know, because nobody have really, you know, prepare us to say in the next year or 2 years to come, you know, this will continue like this. So the government will prepare better. Sometimes, as I said, I don't blame, like, when we come to 2030, for example, we can't say we have failed. Yes, we can say that, but because there wasn't the certain things that came up that we didn't know. But if we have an institution that would be able to do that, we could have actually done better. You understand?
Yeah, your point is good, that when it's necessary for us to start predicting.
Yeah.
And then so that we are ready for eventuality. And the issue of predicting is very crucial, especially when it comes to disaster issues. Yeah. Like in South Africa, they may apply to us. For us, maybe we are just lucky because we are geographically kind of lucky located. So, and we just need to have that. Even in any other area, actually, we just need to be planning to have those kind of focus.
Yeah.
So that the people can really be ready and to respond positively to those, some of this disaster.
Exactly.
But I think it's also very important that maybe the institution and things like that, as we now get into some of those areas, then we start mobilizing local resources, mobilization of resources, not necessarily to go and borrow, because they are some of this consumption that we want to, we are.
But do you know what, Uncle Bwana? There's something lacking in our local investors. There aren't really many. For some reasons, local investors, well, when it comes to government bond, yes, we may have, but it, really investing in local capital, you know, in local capital project, local investors are hesitant. I don't know. I don't know why. You know, how many local investors that we have actually now, even if green hydrogen is the thing, you know, that would help us actually to, you know, transform our energy. Why can't we have local energy? I mean, local investors really pumping money into this.
You are actually speaking like the minister, the current minister of education, Ms. Chen Kam, during one of these, their education is, Bodium and whatever, they were saying that, yes, I think there is a need for a registration to compile and force some of these private institutions and all these things to invest in education, for example, the skill development. And because many a time, this company, I always say, they just come and they harvest what the government has invested in. Because now you see now people are now putting money and this subsidized education and things like that. Very soon, once the people are finished and they graduated and they have acquired skills and all these things, you see them 1 year, 2 years, the person is working with the government or this institution, and then all of a sudden, off he goes.
Yeah.
Off he goes. And then so the person hasn't plowed much into the institution or the system that actually invested in him or her. So these are some of the registration that we need perhaps to come in and craft up so that people can also be compiled and say no. Or maybe you can also do it on your own and say, fine, the retention program. You say, okay, you have worked for these things. I mean, we have invested you in this thing, especially in the critical areas. So you have invested in these things, you now have to work for 5 years or whatever number of years so that at least you can plow in there.
Yeah.
And you can also get some results. Not just that you come a year or two, then you are gone. And at the end of the day, the government might still have this face with skill deficiencies and things like that.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
I think the there is a need for those areas, I mean, for those registration to be formulated and then be put in force so that people can also realize that they don't just see, poach the people out and then you leave the government without maybe some with some kind of gap in terms of skill.
Mm.
So thank you very much, Mike.
All right,
give me an opportunity.
Yeah, thanks for coming through.
Good.
All right.
All right. All right. Yeah. So our time is about 10 minutes to 10 o'clock, where we will be handing over to Tate Naluvanda. He's not yet here. All right. But he will be here soon. All right. So when he will take over for, Kutha Mosha. So yeah. Yeah, no, we were looking at where we were. We're looking at the water bankruptcy, the UN report.
Very good morning.
Yes, morning, Mike.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, good.
Yeah.
the local investors.
Yeah. Do we have, before you go in there, you know, yeah. I have this kind of like, maybe it could be, how would I say it? I might completely wrong about that. I kind of feel it that there are companies in Namibia that are actually South African, and many of them, and we look at them as if they are Namibian actually company, and therefore they really don't have much interest, you know. Let's say, for example, MTC is completely Namibian, and you can see sometimes what they have done in terms of communities. But when you take of some, I'm not mentioning a specific bank just for the sake that that's the case, yeah. They are not doing anything.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's just to say, what do you see them really plowing or investing in Namibia? And I think that could be a problem for us, that we have so many institutions that are South African origined, and their interest really not much of investing here, but you know, just making profit.
Yeah, first of all, they have to be first pay in the economy, profit which they are not seeing in some national crisis, or how do I call it?
Yeah.
Because them, they are not really trusting on the politics. Yeah, and that is what we have to look at in those companies in South Africa. Most of them, they are dissolving to the international companies. They are selling their percentage to be protected by those international, thing like the WTO.
Yeah.
For them to be on the umbrella of the government transaction or the revolution, which is, if you look at in Namibia, politics doesn't look really stable because of the revolution, because people are condemning the constitution.
Mm.
Yeah, we don't know about in the long run whether it will be the same, whether your investment will be protected, because them, they know really, really much in the way they were understanding our founding president or the beginning of our democracy law.
Yeah.
Yeah. They invested a lot to see that they are protected by the government. But at the moment, it's very tough for them to be a part of that.
Mm.
So that's why if you look at those companies that are coming, they are startup with their own
Actually, the point you're making, we were talking about the nuclear power. So what you're saying is that some investor out there would be afraid of actually investing in that, because you never know, 5 years from now, the leader who comes on is abandoning that. And then now you have actually invested in that. And then, you know, the leader who comes and said, no. Hydrogen is not the way to go.
It's not a profitable.
It's not profitable. Something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So those are the problem, like the water that you are talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is this a water profitable to be invested by a private company and sell the water to Namwater? Will it be a profitable, or they just say, no, we don't need your water.
Mm.
And that is what happened to Alika Dagote when the National Petroleum of Nigeria allowing people to import petrol to the country while we have adequate or enough supplier.
Mm.
So those are the things that, as I said, in Africa, we need to discussing a lot. And on the look of the things that we are participating in your program, there are no new comer that they can even say we are understanding this and that.
Yeah.
So those are the things that is dismoraling the other investors to listen to what are the people talking about in that country.
Yeah.
Hmm. Are they really trusting on their democracy transaction? Or they are complaining, how are they complaining? So those are the things that it's not easy. If you look at this project like seawater to purifying it, and you look at what is happening to the project that is about $2 billion in Saudi Arabia,
mm.
it's costing millions of dollars
exactly
for
yeah.
the pipe and how to, because you having to manufacture those pipes in your country, because to importing it is costing a lot of money, and this is the thing that, as I say. South African companies are strong enough to be trusted. At the time, that's why our founding president was, may rest in peace, that was adopted in those, most of the police.
Yeah.
Because he saw that they were maintaining the huge, thing with a little, benefits.
Yeah. Mm.
But us now here, to be honest, those national projects, they don't be funded and completed or as transparent. You hear that the money is finished, or you hear that the person who got the tender ran away, nowhere to be found. So those are the things that to join up with the government is another issue.
Yeah.
Or to buy a bond in the government is another issue. As I said, the parliament, if you listen to, because the backbone of politics, of guiding politics is the constitution. And
yeah.
if you listen to the parliament, it's a different thing, which means most parliamentarians, they don't believe in the constitution. So that is where now it's hard to get in those type of people, because you need to maybe have 50 years of transaction.
Yeah.
For a democratic transaction for you to be trusted by the investors.
Yeah. Mm.
So those are the things that, because these ones, they are just a participator in need of something.
Yeah. That's where they trust Museveni.
yeah.
Because he's consistent there for many years.
Yeah, for many years. Yeah. When you are putting your money and you agree with Museveni,
yeah.
you're making money in that country.
You know that he will be still there after 5 years or 10 years.
After 5 years or 10 years. So he guaranteed you on that. Just put your money in. Don't worry. Nobody will come and disturb what you are putting in.
Yeah.
But this is what we are having in South Africa and Namibia. Look at what they mess up on the car industry.
Mm.
It's gone. Now we are, everybody's importing cars from Japan, Singapore, and UK. So what is really, if I'm putting my money on to building up a room show for cars, will I making money?
Yeah.
You will not. Yeah, because that is what you can even see on the housing development. It's the same issue that you are not protected by the government.
Mm.
And the government is the one that needs to protect our investments.
Yeah.
So that is what I'm saying. People are making profit from those projects. Even Namibians, they are making money from those projects. But they are scared of putting the money in.
Yeah.
Even if you go on the stock exchange and ask how many new people are coming to looking for shares, they were telling you that nobody name us. So that is what is the problem. We need to think about it. And people, to be honest, people that are listening to us, they must also come on board and say and speak up their mind.
Exactly.
This is not the eagle thing.
Yeah.
It's a national thing that we need to open
it's
up.
It's a national conversation, you know?
Yes, it's a national conversation that we need to also our parliamentarians to understand that.
Mm.
This is what you are fighting, no matter you were joking to making salary.
Yeah.
Understanding that you're making more if you are doing this right.
Yeah.
So that is what my, it's not easy for Namibian.
I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying? Sometimes I don't know how really, you know, there are platform and I think when these people become honorables, they feel that they just need to be chased. A program like this, when is something being said and you have information, you know, you would like to come on and provide the information and also maybe guidance and what you know.
But others are also starting now to say, wow, that is good, because the more you listen or the more you read, the more you think.
Yeah. But the other thing is also, how do you, seriously, this is one thing I always really felt. I said, why do we find it difficult really running after either politician or business people or whoever they are that make headlines? So why do we find it difficult really being after this? Because they must realize that, okay, there's a platform like this, you know, and with this platform, I can actually communicate my message, you know, for 15 minutes for 3 or 4 minutes, I can, or 5 minutes, I can be able to speak to the nation.
Yes. Those are the things that I'm saying. If you look at the data of the program, it is huge. People are opening it up. And look at also from David to you.
Yeah.
There are a lot of listeners there. But why are they not participating in these areas? This is the national issues that we need. And even if you look at the abandoning of the, as we were talking about the government.
Yeah.
If you're looking about the abandoning of those NDP, what the Harambe thing?
Yeah.
What if you were now investing in your Harambe, and now you are here? People are talking about NDP. Your money is already disappeared. Right.
Exactly. Because your hydrogen, your green hydrogen was in Harambe Prosperity, you know.
Yes, you see.
And now that has been abandoned. Now we are in NDP 6, you know. Mm-hmm. Where they
look at what is drafted today.
You know, where there's even only maybe a single line on hydrogen, or green hydrogen.
No. And we will not get this far. And we must also understanding that the projects are costing millions of dollars, to be honest. Even the water purifying. That's why we are struggling.
Yeah.
It's because of those money that we don't have.
Mm.
So the project, as I look at it, the project of Saudi Arabia, 220 kilos, it's already $500 million.
Mm.
So how now us to come up with that level of saying, let us purify.
Yeah.
I'm appreciated what is happening to Gamam, to Gamams of Windhoek, that he planned for recycling water. It's helping a lot.
Yeah.
If you could not have that, we might end up not surviving. Yeah. So those are the issues that we have. Okay, Mike.
Oh, man, thanks for coming through.
You're welcome.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, it's 3 minutes past the hour of 10, and we don't see Mr. Naluvanda around here, and I haven't even received any message. All right, we will be waiting for Mr. Naluvanda to arrive. Yeah, and in the meantime, so we were looking at this new concept, you know, this new concept of water bankruptcy. You're most welcome to come through as well, commenting on other things that we talked about. So, and when now we come back to Namibia in terms of this, as I said, well, I was talking earlier on about, they said the report says the biggest user of water globally is agriculture. And I said for us, all right. Okay. And for us, definitely that's a big one. So, and we also talking about, development. The report criticizes, cities like Las Vegas and also Tehran in Iran, for expanding widely despite having a very little water. So, now, the question is, are we thinking about water first before we build new neighborhood or new industries? Or do we assume the water will just be there? So the UN report ends with a silver hope, It says water can be bridge, or can be a bridge, not a barrier, that countries can come together over shared water sources. So we see that with Kavango River Basin, which we share with Angola and Botswana. And yeah, so our future is tied together by that water. So, all right, the message is clear. The message is clear. The age of taking water for granted is over. That's a message. And we are living beyond our means. So the debt is due. So now here's the question. Before I just go, I hand over. So here is my question for you, Namibia. And I want you, I mean, you can discuss this wherever you find yourself because it's time now. Do you believe Namibia is already in a state of water bankruptcy? Have we passed the point of no return with some of our water sources already? So, and are we ready to live within our water budget? So, and or will we keep spending until the well runs dry? So think about that, discuss about that, and look at how do we look at this in terms of these resources are being depleted and what is our plan B. So that's what we have for you this morning. And thanks for those who actually participate. Thank you for coming through and for sharing your ideas, your opinion, for your contribution as well. And let's end up here and hand over to, so we will have actually a playback program for our Kwitha Mosha this morning. It's not live, but it will be a playback. So stay tuned. We will switch on to that now. So for me, let's do this again next week, Monday, here on Eagle FM. My name is Michael Chavelli. Until then, goodbye. Have a great weekend.